You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 12 March. We've got U.S. import-export data due this afternoon. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Sean Dundary, independent analyst. Outsurance results, really, really strong. Special dividend, Harmony results. The market didn't like them. I mean, they had some production issues. We're chatting with Metair's CEO on results. Some good profits from continuing operations, but that EU Rombat fine remains a worry. And then Andrew Fulton, director at 8020. Seniors taking on debt and then defaulting on an increasing amount of it. Definitely concerns there. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, Bloomberg, 32 countries will release 400 million barrels of oil from their strategic reserves. Business Day, Sasol's cyanide force majeure hurts SA's biggest gold producer. The declaration has hit South African gold miners, especially Harmony Gold. Morning markets, US markets were red, S&P down, actually down a tenth of a percent. NASDAQ was up 8 points, which is 0.03%. The East is all red. Sydney down 1%. Tokyo 1.5% off. Hong Kong down 1.3% and 10 cents off 1%. Commodities mostly red. Gold futures 5,154. Brent oil $100.52 a barrel. Platinum 2,158. Palladium 1,650. The rand is 1662. Bitcoin is 69,500. And top 40 opening call red open. 1,020 points down, or a little over 0.9%.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Sean Dundary, independent analyst. Sean, appreciate the early morning time. Let's touch on those Harmony numbers to start. I mean, the gold price obviously is great for any gold miners, still above 5,000 odd. But they've had some production issues. Their all-in sustained costs ergo go up. The market was aggressive. Sold the stock off down some 11%. Misguided or fair response, your thought?
Morning, Simon. Thank you for having me. So Harmony, as you've mentioned, they have some solid results. Looking at, you know, their revenue for the year, their profits, etc. However, in my view, I think the markets did not react positively, mainly because of three reasons. Mm-hmm. So reason number one would be just the production issue that you mentioned. Just looking at the gold prices, I don't think they are capitalizing on, you know, what is currently happening with the gold prices. There is room for growth if they meet their production numbers. And then we looked also at, you know, the high cost in spending, and just the region is escaping me, but I think they do have operations internationally whereby they are spending too much cash and not bringing in enough. Therefore, that affected the share price. And lastly, I also think that with the share price, with the gold price where it's at, there has been a lot of profit taking when it comes to, you know, investors and the like.
Yeah.
So that inherently does affect, you know, what happens with the share price in that front.
I take your point on that. I mean, the flip side is, I mean, the share price is under pressure. Gold stocks have run, and it's almost a sense of, okay, the focus perhaps now shifts kind of to dividends. They're going to pay 50% of net free cash, which is more or less what we're seeing from the other miners, and they are going to be paying chunky dividends going forward.
100%. And as we know that, you know, once a dividend's paid off, that directly affects the share price.
Yeah. No, absolutely. R5.30 dividend this particular period. The other side of the coin was OUTsurance. And they've been around for a while as a standalone listing. They're relatively new. Normalized earnings was up only some 7%. But, I mean, return on equity at 32.3. Nice dividend increase. Special dividend coming through. I mean, these were very strong numbers from OUTsurance, and the market certainly liked them.
No, 100%. I just want to touch on that. You know, 2025 was a good year on the JSE.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, on the flip side, we are going through geopolitical tensions now, so that's it's going to be quite interesting to see. But with Austrians, we are seeing natural organic growth. I think it is one of the most stable insurers that is operating in the region. So locally, for insurance, from an insurance perspective, that return on equity that you mentioned is unusual, mm-hmm. but really great.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that, it is performing quite well locally. And I think I do like the fact that, they are diversifying with operations in Australia, operations in Ireland.
Yeah.
Looking at Ireland, for example, if we look at the numbers, is that let's not think that they're not performing. It is a startup that side, so nationally that will be generating losses.
Mm-hmm.
In Australia, they did have a lot of climate issues, which really did affect their numbers. But overall, looking at locally South Africa, linking it back to the JSE in 2025, I think it was a good set of results in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. And that Ireland operation, as you say, it is loss-making, but it is, they stress, this is startup still, and it is in line with their sort of forecast break-even profile. It could get there eventually. We'll leave it there. Sean Dendery, independent analyst, appreciate the early morning. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Outsurance, the stock is flat over the last 6 months or so. Is that perhaps offering some opportunity? As I said, nice dividend and a chunky special dividend. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Paul O'Flaherty. He is CEO of Metair. Results for year ending December, excluding the Rombat Fund, saw revenue up 57%, HEPS up 82%. Paul, appreciate the time. If we look at the continuing operations, most of the business doing actually very well.
Yeah, we're very pleased with where we ended up, given the environment that we work in. The only disappointment was, turning around AutoZone a bit mm-hmm. quicker. But, we're still very confident on that. In that aftermarket segment, our batteries also came under a lot of pressure in the local aftermarket. But, that's why we have a balanced portfolio. And the OEM manufacturers did really, really well. So we're very happy with it.
You mentioned AutoZone. Behind track, how far behind? How long before that turnaround's complete?
Yeah. I suppose I'm the over-optimistic one. I thought break even for the year end. We didn't get there. So probably 6 to 9 months behind what we initially thought. But, November, December were really good months. We're seeing traction through January as well. So we're confident we can get the turnaround, yeah.
You mentioned OEM. It really was, in many ways, the star of the year. Lots really good coming through there, notwithstanding. A lot of folks might have thought, the tariffs, et cetera, would have hurt some of your customers, but not so.
Yeah, no, I think, certainly Toyota, Ford, don't really export to the US, and lots of competition in the local market from the Chinese and Indians. So if you think of, the OEMs locally they sell about a third of their production locally. So they're under big pressure and mm-hmm. the rest gets exported, and there's obviously pressure in Europe, et cetera. So stable volumes compared to last year. The big pickup for us was margin improvement, and that's all the restructuring we've done in those factories. So that's what makes us happy about the result.
And that's it. Looking at the numbers here, and again, let's park Rombat, we'll come to that in a second. There's been a restructuring, and we can see the benefits of that in the numbers, in the margins.
Yeah.
It's come through strong.
Yeah, 100%. And, we still feel there's a way to go. We had to really work on the factories to be flexible and agile. If an OEM is suddenly dropping, next month by 1,000 vehicles, mm-hmm. you have to be ready for that. You have to be ready to shut. You have to be ready to work, 4 days a week. So we've really trained them, taught them, guided them on how to do this and make sure we can do it properly.
Any new OEMs coming in? You mentioned the Chinese. Most of those are either being imported, fully made up or knocked down. But any new potential OEMs in South Africa?
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of noise. So Stellantis is quiet since last year. Yes, we've heard about Chery
mm-hmm.
taking over the Nissan factory. And then we've heard Great Wall Motors potentially moving into the Mercedes factory. They do engage with us. And we're a primary automotive component. If you're in South Africa, you're going to engage with Metair subsidiaries. So, we're hoping they come in and hoping more that they come in as complete knockdown so that we can get the localization.
Yeah, I get your point on that. You talk around a potential African growth strategy. Mm. Early days, but you've made some visits to some countries and you're having a good look there.
So very interesting. I mean, North Africa is quite a market, right? And Morocco has overtaken South Africa in production. You know, we've been there. It's very exciting. It's quite far. What we do have is we have export channels through our battery business already into sub-Saharan Africa. We have our channels from Associated Battery in East Africa. And then we do have AutoZone franchises in sub-Saharan. So if we consolidate all of them, how do we footprint off them? And that would be our starting point.
Yeah, I get your point on that. Let's touch on the Rombat fine. Quite chunky, not all yours, but a significant bunches. You are appealing it, but on the off chance, and obviously you're confident of your chances of success there. If you don't succeed, it's going to hurt. I mean, your net debt equity ratio, 173%. It's going to hurt the balance sheet. It's not existential, but it's not going to be good at all.
Yeah, Simon, our view is where they're going to get the money, right?
Yeah.
If they go to Rombat, Rombat can't afford it. They can't get to Metair because we're protected by our obligors. All of our assets are secured to the banks. All of our cash flows are secured by the banks. So post 5 years of the bank, you know, and hopefully we'd be in a better position, then maybe we can have a talk if we are indeed guilty, which we don't believe.
Gotcha.
So we think this has got a way to go.
I take your point, absolutely. Last question, looking forward, I mean, this might have been a slightly different conversation 2 weeks ago before the attack on Iran. We've got a consumer that is, I don't know, I mean, I keep on saying it's still tough, but better than it was a year or two ago. We've seen robust vehicle sales. Metair looking well positioned.
Yeah, I think so. Again, the people are buying cars. That's true, but it's Chinese brands. So that's competition for Toyota and Ford locally. So, you know, they're looking much more at the export markets, and the export markets are also good competition. But, you know, they've indicated their volumes for the year. We're confident with those volumes. We can still have good results, provided those volumes come through. And as you say, you know, how does this Iran thing play out?
Yeah.
But, you know, with the flexibility in our factories, happy. Where we want to see the spend is in the aftermarket. So if the consumer does have the money, if they are starting to, you know, the age of the fleet is very old here in South Africa. People need to buy parts. You know, we're hopefully well positioned.
Yeah, I get your point. We do have an old fleet in South Africa. We'll leave it there. That's Paul O'Flaherty, CEO at Metair. Appreciate the time. Give you money, smoother returns with Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Andrew Fulton. He's director at 8020, their recent 2025 Q4 credit stress report out. Andrew, appreciate the time. Focusing on South Africans in their golden years, what we are seeing is a increasing aged population. This is a global trend. Medical advances, declining birth rates, but older folks are making up a more significant part of the population.
Yeah, thanks for having us on the show. It's certainly a demographic trend that we're seeing globally, and particularly in South Africa. The number of South Africans in their sort of golden years is growing and accelerating. So we thought that we would do a deeper dive into them and their credit situation, just to kind of give an idea of how credit is affecting that demographic.
And what are we seeing? Because in the immediate, my thought is that, I mean, I kind of thought, and to be clear, I'm not yet in that demographic, so I speak from ignorance, but that credit would be fairly low in demand because of fixed income. But your data says otherwise.
Yeah. So we do a segmentation of all South Africans called the 80-20 national segmentation. And we've got two elderly segments. So 65 plus, retired or elderly, whatever term you want to use. And the one is comfortable retirees. So they're 2 million more affluent. These are the people who had good jobs during apartheid, were able to save for their retirements, and are actually the second most affluent of our segment. The other one is the humble elders. That's 4 million sort of bottom of the pyramid, financially vulnerable. So we're not looking at 65 plus as a general group. We're looking at those two different segments, and they do have very different credit holdings.
What are you finding between the two, the humble elders and the comfortable retirees? Who is taking the loans? Who is managing them well?
Yeah, no, I mean, it is a really interesting conversation. So if we look at the humble elders, the sort of financially vulnerable, predominantly female, struggling financially, they really are that lost apartheid generation. They weren't able to earn or save or invest, and now they're retiring, dependent on the family and the state with SASA grants or family. They took out about 610,000 loans in quarter four, which is quite a lot, but concentrated in retail and personal loans. So, you know, they don't qualify for credit cards, so they're using those two credit vehicles in order to cover their household expenses.
And the comfortable retirees, where are they borrowing? I'm assuming there must be some loan activity happening in that space as well.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a smaller segment, so it's only 2 million people, and all of those are credit active. But they took out about, you know, a significant 230,000 new loans in quarter four. 30,000 of those people do have a mortgage, and they make up about 13% of all home loans. So they are in that secured credit space because, as I said, you know, they are the second most affluent of our segments. But they're certainly, you know, coming under pressure. They've scaled back on their secured credit since last year, probably due to repayment pressures, due to, you know, disposable income shrinking because of inflation and other costs. And yes, you know, they are on a fixed income. The other thing that's fascinating to think about with this group is they face particular biases and difficulties. You know, they've got low financial resilience. They're digitally excluded. They're not able to kind of easily go onto an iPad and take out a loan. They're living on fixed or limited incomes. And let's be honest, you know, there's age discrimination in many areas, the workforce, in lending, and in other areas. So it is quite a marginalized group in that way, in that space.
Do we see a higher or worsening sort of default levels in the sort of older, or is that not something you looked at?
We actually did look at defaults, and that is a particular area. So we saw a sustained rise in the number of defaulters, which is accelerating rather than stabilizing. And what's particularly worrying about that is with the general population, the number of defaulters has declined every quarter since 2023, and the 65 plus is moving in the other direction. So that makes them particularly unique amongst our age segments, and obviously also particularly worrying.
And that is the, as you're saying it, I mean, it paints a depressing picture, because if I find myself in a bad credit situation, I could get a second job, I could get a side hustle, I could try something on my mobile. But for a senior, a retiree, it's a whole different game. I mean, in theory, they've finished earning now. They're now in the spending pot.
Exactly, exactly. And I mean, if you read the research on retirement, it is quite frightening and sobering. You know, FNB finds that only 10% of South Africans believe they'll be able to retire comfortably at age 60. And now with the two-pot system, what we're seeing is that a lot of people are making that future situation even worse to pay for today's needs and expenses. Yeah. You know, they're withdrawing money and they're not replacing that. So yeah, it is sobering.
Because I mean, the 10X report always comes back to it's that 6% number, and that's probably a global number, but it's definitely applicable here. And of course, it's not just that your income is fixed, or maybe you're getting growth fixed annuity or something like that, but your costs are typically well ahead of inflation. I'm thinking medical costs. These are not sort of going along at 3.5% a year.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's when you're experiencing probably your highest medical expenses in your life. Yeah. I mean, that's when all those things start breaking down.
Yeah.
We've seen typically medical expenses are double CPI. So yeah, if you didn't plan properly during your career, that can come back to bite you.
Yeah, absolutely can. And the key lesson is try not to be that 94%, try be the 6%. Easy for me to say it, harder for some to do it. We'll leave it there. Andrew Fulton, Director, 8020. Appreciate the time.
That's it for today. We were chatting with Zameli Mabandre yesterday. He, of course, from FNB Wealth and Investments, talking ABSA results. They've typically sort of been, I don't know, the lagger bank. Although there are a lot of folks who say, you know, they've got good value prospects. We asked you if there was value there. Almost half said the others are better. A third said yes, looking great. And the rest of you were saying no banks for you. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and an awesome review in your podcatcher of choice. And we'll chat again tomorrow. Vehicle sales.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.